The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's Halef. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Slay, it ain't so. I've got my mind set on Yule. Wishing elf and safety to you all this holiday season. Oh, yes, for better or worse, the holidays are upon us, my dear listeners. While the holidays may not seem like they are as full of cheer, joy, and merriment as all of the pervasive holiday marketing would have us believe, our stories today are full of humor and family. Whether you are planning time together with family and friends, or trying to avoid get-togethers as much as possible this season, sit back and enjoy stories from authors frequently featured here on TAL, Lisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella. From their book, Best Friends, Occasional Enemies, The Lighter Side of Life as a Mother and Daughter, copyright 2011, we'll hear stories about family, the holidays, and ways we try to make the best of both when we have to. I Refuse to Dress Up for the Mall by Lisa. This holiday, I did a lot of my shopping online. It's easy, it's efficient, and it doesn't involve taking a shower. You need to dress up to go out shopping, and at the mall, it's practically prom. So I stayed home and clicked to get gifts for daughter Francesca, but this turned out to be a bad idea. Shopping online is like life. Few things are as advertised, and there's always an unwelcome surprise. For example, let's start with something simple, like a book. I buy tons of books, plenty in bookstores, online, and electronically, too. I figure it's karmic. If I want people to buy my books, I have to buy other people's books, and we all need to read more, as literacy is essential for democracy. The more literate we are, the better leaders we elect. Well, in theory. But as Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? Anyway, I'd heard that Mark Twain had just published his autobiography, so I bought it online. Yes, Mark Twain came out with his autobiography, even though he's dead. What an author! I myself am planning to write my autobiography 10 years after I'm dead, at which point I'll be starting a new thriller series, several romance novels, a graphic novel, and yet another hilariously funny book of essays. I plan to be very productive in death. It's only now that I'm too lazy to dress up for them all. But apparently Mark Twain wrote his autobiography and asked that it not be published until 100 years after his death, which, if you ask me, is taking a big chance. How did he know we'd care? At this point, how many English majors are left? I'd thought we were extinct. But anyway, I bought it online for Francesca, sight unseen. I figured, how bad can it be? It's Mark Twain. So it came in the mail, and its quality isn't the problem. It's the quantity. When I opened the huge box, I learned that the book is almost 2,000 pages. Why does it matter? Well, the paradox is that, though I shopped online, I don't want Francesca to know I shopped online. It sounds like I didn't care enough about her to take a shower. Busted. Even though I'm sure she'd still want the book, I can't give it to her with a straight face now that I know it's as thick as cinder block. And I don't want her to feel as if she has to read the whole thing. I'm an English major, and I can tell you, I'm not sure I'll read the whole thing. Although I did read Keith Richards' autobiography, which weighed in at 700 pages. These people have a lot of life. But I digress. My other online shopping surprise was a custom t-shirt I bought for her because I found this site where you could upload a photo and put it on a t-shirt. Great idea, huh? Also, in theory. She loves her dog Pip, so I got his picture and went on the site where it said you could place the photo in the middle of the shirt or on the pocket. But there was no pocket, which was confusing, and it looked odd in the middle, so I played it safe and put it over the mythical pocket. And then the shirt came in the mail. I held it up. The picture was way too small to even see the dog, and he's placed on the left nipple, and it's nipple-sized. Uh-oh. How could I give this to my beloved daughter? Would she wear her dog on her nipple? And do I really want to draw men's eyes to that general vicinity? So I decided to package the t-shirt as a nightshirt for her to wear to bed and wrap it with the Mark Twain autobiography to put her to sleep. Or to knock out any man who looks at her Pip, or her Pipple. Mother Mary and the Christmas Standoff by Lisa. When we last heard about Mother Mary, I was worried she wasn't using her oxygen, as the doctor ordered, and her nose was turning blue. Well, we were on our way to a blue Christmas, because we stopped speaking to each other. Here's what happened. One day, I just noticed that since our conversation about the oxygen, Mary Mother hadn't called me. She usually calls every 3 days or so, just to say hi, but it had been about 6 days and no word. So I called her, wondering, but she didn't pick up. Still, I didn't suspect anything. It isn't unusual for her not to answer, because she naps at odd times during the day. In fact, she takes lots of naps because she doesn't get enough oxygen, because she doesn't listen to her doctor. Grr! Anyway, a few more days went by, and one day I realized she hadn't returned my call. You may think I'm slow on the uptake, and you would be right, but in my own defense, there's a reason it didn't dawn on me that I was getting the silent treatment. I never had before, as Mother Mary much prefers the yelling treatment, or the nagging treatment, or the world-class guilt treatment. But not talking? It's against our religion. We're women, so we never shut up. Anyway, to stay on point, I didn't figure it out on my own. Brother Frank's birthday came up, so I gave him a call, and he told me, "You're in big trouble. Mom's not talking to you." Really? I couldn't believe it. And frankly, it got me angry. She's mad because I told her to follow her doctor's orders? Yes, she said you were fresh. I wasn't fresh. I was right. So I did the only logical thing. I folded my arms, figuratively speaking. If she's not speaking to me, I'm not speaking to her either. Hoo boy, my brother said. Happy birthday, Frank. And so we were at a standoff. If she was boycotting me, I'd boycott her right back. Days went by. I thought about her a lot, worried about her more, and checked my phone for messages. Mother Mary was standing her ground. And then I realized if I was facing Mother Mary in a standoff, I was going to lose, because I'd seen her anger segue into a grudge, which is a different thing altogether. You've heard that matter can be a gas, liquid, or solid, but there's a fourth state, a grudge, as held by Mother Mary. Her grudges are more solid than any concrete. Her grudges could build fallout shelters. Granite wishes it could be a Mother Mary grudge. I can be stubborn, but I'm still the daughter. In other words, the apple doesn't fall from the tree, but the tree is still the tree, if you follow. And an apple is no match for a tree, especially the Mother Mary tree. Then the holidays came upon us, and I felt my grudge begin to wobble. I was still mad, but I was more worried than mad, and if something happened to her while I was boycotting her, this apple would become applesauce. The holidays are the time we're most grateful for our family, however angry they make us, or however silly they are for not listening to their doctors. Families need each other, like oxygen. So I called. She picked up, and I said, "Merry Christmas, Ma." And she said, "About damn time." I'm sorry I was fresh. I made another doctor's appointment, and if he says I have to use my oxygen, I will. Which is her way of saying, I'm sorry. So, everything is going to be all right. Busy Signal by Lisa. Here's what we don't have anymore that we need, especially during the holiday season. A busy signal. Do you remember the busy signal? It may still exist, for all I know, but I haven't heard one in ages. It was a horrible beeping noise that you got if you called somebody on the phone, but they were already on the phone talking to somebody else. This was before voicemail, and before computers. Spanx hadn't been invented, and telephones were two empty cans on a cotton string. Let's slow down and analyze the purpose of the busy signal. Here's the idea behind it, which is now itself extinct. If you were doing something, you couldn't be doing something else at the same time. Silly, quaint, an antique idea. Of course, nowadays we know you can do plenty of things at once, like driving, drinking coffee, texting, eating a takeout salad, and changing the radio station. But back then, if you got a busy signal and you wanted to talk to someone, you would have to do something else that no one does nowadays. You had to wait. Wait. And wait. Then try again and wait some more. I like opera, so let me remind you of a scene in Puccini's Madame Butterfly. It's the story of a woman who's waiting for her lover to come home, but he got married to someone else, unbeknownst to her. So she's sitting there, kneeling with their child, both with hands on their laps, waiting for him. The entire opera stops while we, the audience, wait with her in real time. You actually feel her waiting. And if you want to feel waiting these days, you'll have to buy a ticket to Madame Butterfly, because nowadays, that's the only place that anybody waits. Nobody waits anymore, for anything. Waiting was rendered obsolete by multitasking. We do five things at once, so nobody has to wait. And now, we hate to wait. We are trained to hate to wait. We can't wait. We don't have time. And especially not during the holidays. There's no time. Peace on earth, but I gotta go. I'm that way now. I buy a gift card and can't wait for the sales girl to go find a box, which is another thing that doesn't exist anymore. You could spend a fortune on a cashmere sweater, and it's guaranteed they'll still ask you if you want a box. Here's what I want to say. No way! Why would I need a box for a Christmas gift? Nah, I'll just take that cashmere sweater and shove it... Sorry. So instead, I answer, yes, thanks, I need a box. The sales girl will say nothing, but merely blink. And I will say, you see, child, a box is a cardboard thing with a top and bottom. We used to have them in the old days, before menopause. She will nod to me, then say she has to go find a box in the back. But I have no time to wait, so I'll take the lovely sweater in a paper bag and grumble. And my gift sweater will turn out as wrinkly as I am, teaching me a lesson. We are all of us doing too many things at once, especially during the holiday season. So I say, take it slower. Wait for the box. And if they don't have one, go to gift wrap. Guaranteed, in gift wrap, you'll learn to wait. But flip it. Enjoy your wait. Breathe it in. Still your head and your heart. This is the time of your life. Think of it as your own personal busy signal, and in your head, it will sound like opera. 'Twas the Night Before by Lisa. For Christmas, I got broken pipes. Again. Let me explain. Just before the holidays, I went down to the basement. First mistake, right? Going down to the basement is asking for trouble. There was water all over the basement floor. It didn't take a plumber to figure out that one of the overhead pipes was leaking. Correction, actually, it did. It took 4 different workmen to figure out what was leaking. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I called my plumbing and heating company, and they sent over a plumber, who said I needed a heating guy instead. And next, a heating guy came over and said I needed a plumbing guy instead. And then a third guy came over who could do both and told me it would take $4,000 to fix my problem, which was a combination of plumbing and heating problems. That's all I understood, as I stopped listening after the $4,000 part. But it had to be fixed, so I said yes, and they put me on the schedule. This was 2 days before Christmas. I stayed home and waited for the plumber-slash-heater guy to come, though I had 3 zillion things to do, among them buying last-minute gifts and turkey for Christmas dinner. When no one showed up, I called the company, and they said I wasn't on the schedule, after all. Oops. No problem. Any other week but Christmas. I had no gifts and no turkey. Time was running out. The company said they'd send somebody as soon as possible, which was Christmas Eve day. This was a problem, because it was the last shopping day until you know what, and all I had for the holiday dinner was cereal. Also, the tree had to be decorated, so never let it be said that I leave some things until the last minute, because I leave everything until the last minute. Also, if you recall, my last Christmas Eve was spent with plumbers and heating guys. If it's a federal holiday, I'm spending it with plumbing and heating guys. So I said to the company, no thanks, don't send the plumbers on Christmas Eve. Send the plumbers on Monday, after the weekend. What could go wrong? You'll see. Francesca and I enjoyed Christmas Eve day, picking up our turkey and fixings, and stopped by the mall, where we were interviewed by a TV reporter as one of those crazy last-minute shoppers. I blamed it on Francesca. On camera. That's the kind of mother I am. So we came home all happy, but as we were decorating the tree, we noticed it was getting cooler in the house. And long story short, on Christmas morning, we opened our presents in 55-degree weather. Inside. Whatever had gone wrong in the basement had knocked out our heat. But no worries, we were warmed by tidings of comfort and joy. Until the house temperature dipped to 52. We had put shopping ahead of heating, and now we're going to pay for it. Still, no worries. We remained calm. We would tough it out for the weekend. Then the plumber-slash-heater guy would come on Monday. But a snowstorm came instead, and the plumber-slash-heating guy couldn't. So you know where this is going. We have no heat for 5 days now. Francesca keeps a fire burning in the fireplace in the family room, and I keep the hot chocolate coming. We sleep on couches, huddled with the dogs, in the flickering light of the fire. So I asked her if we should have done the prudent thing and let the plumber come instead of having Christmas Eve. Nah, she answered with a smile. Good girl. Mathlete by Lisa. I was never good at math, but I figured it didn't matter. Unfortunately, it does, at least when you make cranberry sauce. And it's more than just math, it's science, too. I figured I'd never need to know anything about volume, but I do. Again, I was wrong, when it comes to cranberry sauce. Cranberry sauce is high maintenance for a condiment. We begin with what happens to me every holiday meal when cranberry sauce demands to be made. For some reason, I never end up with the 12-ounce bag of Ocean Spray cranberries that dummy-proofs the entire process. It has the recipe right on it, and all you have to do is follow it. Dump the cranberries and sugar into the boiling water, and you're good to go. Plus, I get extra credit for making my own cranberry sauce from scratch and not just opening the can and making it look homemade by chopping it up with a fork. That's beneath me, sort of. Obviously, I'm not a high-rent kind of cook. I own fancy cookbooks, but the recipe on the Ocean Spray bag is as reliably awesome as the one for chocolate chip cookies on the Hershey's bag. If these companies ever change their wrapping, I can't cook. But anyway, the store is always out of the Ocean Spray bag by the time I get there, so I have to buy whatever overpriced organic cranberries are on hand. And unfortunately, they're always too pretentious to have a recipe on the package. And this time, I ended up with a plastic container of artisanal cranberries whose label said that it contained 1 dry quart of cranberries. Huh? I don't know what a quart of cranberries is. A quart of milk? I'm familiar. But cranberries? I have a vague understanding that there's some kind of difference between dry measures and liquid measures, but I never understood what the difference was. For this reason, I own a bewildering array of Pyrex measuring cups, but I have no idea if they measure dry stuff or wet stuff, or if that matters. That would be the science part. So I thumb through my fancy cookbooks on Thanksgiving Day to find a cranberry sauce recipe, but they're too full of themselves to help me out with such a basic recipe, and even the joy of cooking doesn't have one. Now I know I'm in trouble. If it's not in the joy of cooking, my cooking is joyless. I'm fresh out of joy. So I go online to try and find a cranberry sauce recipe, and every single recipe tells you to use 12 ounces of cranberries, because everybody but me has that Ocean Spray bag. Ocean Spray intends world domination. In fact, Ocean Spray is the Microsoft of cranberry companies. Of course, the Ocean Spray recipe is on its website, and it specifies 12 ounces of cranberries. But I have no idea how many ounces are in 1 dry quart, or the other way around. I know it sounds dumb, but I don't even know which is bigger, or heavier, or wetter, or drier. You see the problem. So I type the following question into Google. How many ounces are in 1 dry quart? And a bunch of links pop up. So I click on the first from Wiki Answers, and it reads 32. Blink, blink, blink. I don't even know what that means as far as the recipe goes. Hoping to have a clue, I click on the next link, which purports to answer the same exact question, and its answer, also from Wiki Answers, is 5. Uh-oh. Now I officially don't understand. There are either 5 or 32 ounces in 1 dry quart. And the only person dumber than me is this Wiki dude. So now I'm starting to panic, and I go from one link to the next, eventually falling into a wormhole of conversion tables where I encounter words like drams and deciliters, and I learn that 1 firkin is equal to 34.069 liters. I had no idea. I should have listened in firkin class. And do you know how many liters are in a hogshead? If you said 238.48, you win a can of cranberry sauce, which is what I'm buying as soon as I get my coat on. And for our last story, a new Tutel author, Hank Mancini, tells us about his experience in trying to make the best out of the holidays and family. From his book, Memoir of a Nerd, Humorous Essays and Short Stories, Copyright 2021. The essay, Christmas. What do you do when you don't have money to buy Christmas presents? For my mother, now 93 years old, Christmas has always been her favorite time of the year. For years, she decorated every room in the house for the holidays, including the bathrooms. Her Christmas tree was always perfect. Besides decorating, my mother also really enjoys gift-giving. Christmas Eve, when the family gathered at her home, there were often as many as 10 presents for each person. Because there were so many gifts, each person's presents were wrapped in a different color or design gift wrap, and everyone had their own stack of presents. My wife and I had just bought our first home, and we were broke. We were so short of money that we typically had to scrounge for change to put gas in our car. We had no money to buy presents, but we didn't want to show up on Christmas Eve empty-handed and disappoint my mom. One evening, when we knew my parents would not be home, my wife and I went to their house and started looking through closets and drawers. We were searching for things that they might not miss and might not remember were theirs. An hour later, we had gathered 8 to 10 items. We took what we found to our home and wrapped everything up as presents for my mom and dad. Christmas Eve, my wife and I were proud to walk into my folks' home, each carrying a stack of beautifully wrapped gifts. As my mom opened her presents, she oohed and aahed about the great choices we made. One of her things that we wrapped was a sweater that we found deep in a closet drawer, and we had never seen her wear. Opening the present, she exclaimed, "Oh, I love this sweater. I have one that is just like it, and it is one of my favorites." Later that evening, my wife and I finally fessed up to what we had done. Because of the excitement and overall mayhem, neither my mom nor dad understood what had just happened. It wasn't until a few days later that my mother finally realized that all her gifts from us that year were her own things, but she did not seem to mind. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number, one more time, is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.